Welcome to Radio Simply. This is part two of our interview with Ron Osborne. Definitely got a lot of good stuff in the first go-round, and we're going to get right into it here on the second go-round with everybody's questions. I am actually going to pick a person at random, not so randomly, because I just want to hear them say something on a webcast or podcast for once. Phil, ask a question.
Phil.
I was actually typing a little request that I get in there before Pia does.
Yes, you get in there, and you do it well.
Get in there. What about you? Yes, thank you.
Noonan.
Ron, I heard quiet. I heard some time ago or read some time ago that when dealing with television, it's like a club for writers. And if you were writing, say, the Happy Joe show, and I wanted to write for it, I couldn't do it because you and your friends who were the writers could not risk losing their job for a new guy coming in. With the script, is that how true is that?
Well, there are a couple of answers. I mean, any outsider can write a script for any show. I mean, that's how we did it. We wrote a script for MASH. MASH never read it, but it didn't matter. In fact, oftentimes, you know, the best way in is to write a spec script for a show you have the most affinity with. If it's fast-paced drama, you do 24. If it's conceptual comedy, you do 30 Rock. Whatever, whatever shows you off to best effect. 90% of the time, 99% of the time, that show won't read it.
Right.
And there's a few reasons for that, but that's understood. You basically use it as a sample for these other kinds of shows. Back on Moonlighting, it was so painful. People would send us these Moonlighting scripts that were just about, I don't know, surfacey banter and whatnot. And since there was nothing else on the air that was quite what we were doing, we asked for plays, we asked for screenplays, for samples to give outside writers assignments. Now, the other part of your question is if I've done a show, well, I have. I was about to say, if I've worked with writers that I trust and I start up a new show, I'll go back to those writers. I won't look for new writers. You know, I've done that. And most producers do that. They continue to work with the people they're comfortable with and they trust. Plus there becomes a shorthand after a while. Notes become fewer and that sort of thing. So it's just the path of least resistance. In the end, it helps and it hurts. When any given year, there's about 8,000 members in the Writers Guild West, about, 45-50% of them don't work in any given year. And most who do get one or two things, and then there's only about 5% that's writing most of the stuff you see on TV. Does that answer the question?
It kind of does, but also I remember reading somewhere where if I wanted to let's say I wanted to write for MASH. I know it's done and over with right now. What I would do is I would write, say, a Moonlighting script and send it to the people at MASH because those in Moonlighting would say, well, they'll go through it with a fine-tooth comb saying, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. But the people at MASH, the writers at MASH would say, well, this is a good idea, you know, this is good writing for Moonlighting. Let's see if we can, this person can do good writing for MASH. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was a very succinct way of what I rambled on about earlier. That's true. That's exactly the point. in the mid-90s, we did an animated show called Duckman. That's probably my favorite thing we've ever done. And at the time, people were sending us Simpsons scripts, but the style of the Simpsons was so different than what we were looking for. And I had a hard time judging, you know, if someone could write for this show. We got an awful lot of Seinfeld scripts, which was ironic because we had not cast Jason Alexander yet as the main voice. And I didn't care for Seinfeld, so I couldn't judge that. I couldn't read that script and go, oh, this is a good Seinfeld. But yes, it's true. I mean, you look for to use your example, what was the through line between Moonlighting and MASH is the banter, the dialogue, the wit, if you know. Those shows had that's why it attracted us more than the setup payoff jokes, joke writing of sitcom, which frankly scares the hell out of me. You know, it's so much easier to write dialogue that has a joke in it, and you know, versus, you know, the you're a writer, what do you write? Ransom notes, you know, I mean, anything like that. I it scares the hell out of me. I'm done.
Okay.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, since you are a writer, and I would assume that you write a lot, how much of what you write actually becomes something on screen, whether big screen, little screen, or whatever? You know, and how much do you write? Do you write every day?
I've never thought of it. Yes, I've never thought of a percentage. I guess, boy, I that's a good question. I can't put a number on it. I will say this: on a most series, like, you know, when you're on a Moonlighting or a Duckman or a, I'll get the West Wing later, but most of what you write ends up on the screen.
Most of what you do, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how much do you write then every day? I'm just curious because I think some people might be like me. I try to write like 5 to 10 pages every day. And I'm just curious because I had this like idea in my head that you write a bunch of stuff and then some things get options, some things might get on screen, some things, you know, you know, but I thought I honestly would have thought that the actual stuff that ends up viewable to a vast audience is quite
long.
Small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
so
is.
The, you know.
But here's the other side of that. My partner and I have written many pilots over the years. We just wrote one for ABC Family.
Mm-hmm.
The pilots. It's harder than ever now to get an original pilot on. I'm guessing over the years I could sit down and figure it out at some point, but it's safe to say we've been paid to write 20 to 25 pilots. Now out of that, I'm guessing CBS, well, Duckman was pre-sold, but let's include that, about 3 got made. So, you know, that's not a great percentage.
Yeah, and how many get optioned, just not getting made, you know?
The script that I was dealing with today has been optioned previous to this 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
So you got paid for every option, but that's always against a sale price that has yet to happen. Go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking, I'm just trying to do math here, and I'm thinking, you know, so here you are and you have all these credits and stuff, and that's your percentage. And here, I am and a lot of other people. And it's like, if that is your percentage, then I'm shit out of luck.
Well, yes, but it looks that way. But as I tell, and I teach at my alma mater, it's one yes trumps 1,000 no's. It took me 5 years, 5 years out of Art Center to make a first sale, and there wasn't a day that passed that I didn't wonder what the hell I'm doing. You know,
how active were you in trying to sell?
Very. I wrote every day. I took jobs that I wouldn't take full-time jobs. I would take jobs that were always temp jobs so that I would work enough to make my rent and utilities for that month, and then I'd quit working. And I'd write. So I wrote a number of screenplays. One of them got me some attention. But it wasn't until I tried sitcom, you know, my agent suggested sitcom that things started happening for me. And that's something I wouldn't have done on my own.
Then I have a question here. In your opinion, is it easier to write a feature or for television? I mean, the big screen or the small screen?
It's easier. It's easier once the show is up and running. Pilots are their own animal, and they have their own challenges, and they're not that easy because you have to serve a number of masters. But once the show is up, I love writing television. I love writing TV over feature because if you've created these characters you want to spend time with.
Yeah.
But you've got, you know, in the case of Duckman, I loved writing that show because to us he was kind of an animated Howard Beale from Network, you know, except he wasn't that intelligent. And so I could, we did 70 episodes. I could have done another 70. And in the case of Moonlighting, you know, we love doing romantic comedy. If you write a 2 hour romantic comedy, a 100 minute romantic comedy, you've got to set them up, give it the arc, pay it off and walk away. In the case of something like Moonlighting, you had hours and hours to explore various facets of that relationship.
Exactly.
Through romantic comedy. And we loved it. We like it more than feature. And frankly, once again, at a certain point, the writer has more power in television. I mean, it obviously not a staff writer, but if you work your way up to showrunner status, yeah, you've got power.
Hey, Ron.
This is a really funny thing because I have a friend who shut the up, Jeff, or I'm going to kick your ass.
Pia, let Jeff ask a question.
No, go ahead, Pia. Go ahead, Pia.
No, I have a friend who wrote a television series, a pilot, and like I don't remember now, like 16 or whatever shows. And he went to the NatP thing in Los Angeles, and people picked it up, and they were all excited about it and all this and that. And then they decided to ask him to please rewrite this into a feature script. Okay, so he did. But to me, what's the difference there? I mean, why would they want it as a feature instead? And what are the chances of a feature rather than a TV script?
Both are very slim odds. Just, you know, I mean, look, the my manager put it, you know, these numbers are in the ballpark. 50,000 things get registered every year. 500 get bought, 200 get made. I mean, that's kind of the funneling down of anything. It's hard to say. I mean, in TV, I suppose now with the 500 channel universe, there are more venues. Feature production has come down drastically ever since the strike 2 years ago. And before that, it wasn't great. You know, I guess in terms of American studio films, you're looking before the strike about, you know, at about 500, 600. Right now, you're looking at about 350. So, you know, think of everyone out there writing, you know, and all the stuff that gets, and usually it's about 45 to 50,000, pieces of material get registered every year in the Writers Guild. So.
But so in your mind, if a studio asks you to, rewrite your television series into a feature that's like a down thing?
No, it depends. If I thought the feature I had the meeting on today, if someone said this makes a great series, I would do it. In fact, a feature that I did not write with my partner called Heartland, a producer has come to me and said this would make a wonderful pilot. If you can cut this down, it's kind of horror drama comedy, and it's all these interlocking stories a la Shortcuts or Pulp Fiction. And he wants to rework it as a pilot. And since it didn't sell, it got me a lot of meetings, but no one ever pulled the trigger on it. I'm considering it.
Okay.
Hey, Jeff, you got a question? Go ahead.
Yeah, Ron, I have a question for you. I assume you did not create the characters for the Moonlighting, right?
No.
And what was it like coming into that, knowing that you got two main big stars with a very popular show and starting to write for them, talking and acting?
They weren't big yet. We came out in the very beginning. Glenn had done five or six shows that were a summer replacement. Bruce was an unknown.
He was at first, sure, yeah.
Yeah. And Sybil, I mean, yeah, she was a name, but my experience up until that point was to always come into existing shows and write. I was more intimidated writing for Robin Williams than anyone. So
even at the start of his career,
this would be the third season of Mork and Mindy.
He was a fairly big comedian though, right? Before Mork and Mindy?
No. He was a street performer. And he did stand up in San Francisco. He did a guest spot on a Gary Marshall show. They spun it off into a series, and that was it.
Yeah, when was that? I mean, the really young Robin Williams, there's a stand-up show that they always show. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt the whole bit. It was that during the Mork and Mindy
days?
It was after?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but to answer your question, that's the norm. The norm is you go into a situation go into someone else's situation. And write for that until you get to the level where you create the characters that other people come on and write.
Okay, so Ron, is that easy or hard for you?
There's always a learning curve.
Wouldn't you rather write your own characters and go forward from that or not?
Of course, but then it just depends on the opportunities and what you're ready for.
And why do they do that? Why do they bring people in when somebody's already wrote the character successfully?
Because you need a staff. Because, for instance, oh boy, this gets into a horrendous story, but we were asked by Aaron Sorkin to come on to Sports Night. Mm-hmm. And we liked the show. We actually loved the show. And we had a very nice meeting with him and said, in effect, that show is so your voice. It's been on. And we appreciate the offer, but there's not a lot we can bring to this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then comes West Wing, and John Wells comes to us and says, well, look, here's a new show. He can't do two shows at once. Come on. We need people to run the writer's room, and you do this. And we thought, yeah. Now, we watched the pilot. That's all that existed. And we thought, man, this is a show I want to be a part of. Now, it would turn out to be a nightmare. But then we did. We went on to that show and had to learn to write those characters. And you know, they were extremely well written on Aaron's part. You know, I mean, he, whatever I think of him, he's a pretty brilliant writer.
And right. When you write for a show, do they give you like the series Bible, and then you have to write from that, or how do they get indoctrinated?
I've never seen a series Bible. I have never seen one.
Seriously?
I don't know who makes them. I don't know who writes them. I haven't done any show that I've done. I take it back. Disney. We just sold the series I did at Disney. They work from a Bible. They do. But in episodic mainstream television, I've never seen it. You come in, you read the scripts that are in development, you look at any produced film, and you just learn from that. And you sit in meetings, and you know, you pick the brain, you begin to glean from the people above you, you know, what you do and what you don't do. Oh. And then, by the way, you write and you get notes, and that's how you learn. It's grueling, but in a good way.
Okay.
I actually have a question that was it's kind of related to about four of us here in this call and series work as well. We've all developed and written episodes for a series that we came up with called Soul Shadows, and it's kind of a Tales from the Crypt, Twilight Zone type thing. And a lot of the episodes fall into the supernatural realm. Some of them go more into the gore side. I mean, if it was something that was ever going to be picked up and filmed as written, it would probably be on cable. Mm-hmm. I wrote an episode myself that takes place at the, you know, quarantine zone at Chernobyl. so it's probably going to, it would cost a lot of money to make, but some of the stuff is pretty expensive. I mean, just to get something like that out there and read by people. I mean, what kind of recommendations would you make, in that regard?
Let me tell you what you're up against. The reason anthology television really isn't, you know, great anthology television used to exist. And one of the things is that it was expensive, because you didn't have a lot of existing assets that you could carry over from week to week. I mean, certainly, you know, you had sets you could rebuild and repaint and everything, but when you get a show up and running, you've got standing sets. That helps greatly.
Definitely.
Cast. Every week, you gotta cast anew.
New That's cast, important. Right.
Audience investment. Every week, the audience, you know, they like to know who they're watching, who they're tuning in to see, who they are invested in emotionally. So those are the kinds of things that networks, these are some of the ways they think in terms of dealing with a show that every week deals with entirely new characters. Now, it doesn't mean they don't make them. I know sci-fi, they did The Outer Limits. A while ago. Gosh, what else?
But Ron, what about actually Tales from the Crypt or Masters of Horror, which are very successful shows on cable
networks? Tales from the Crypt was
made three movies came off of it.
Well, but also that was put together by some powerhouse people.
Sure, definitely. I understand that, yes.
Also based on a comic book.
Yeah. What was the other series you mentioned?
Masters of Horror.
No, Masters of Horror. Masters of Horror was done by a company called Industry Entertainment, and what they had done is pre-sold the they got all their funding from Europe. They came up with the ideas. They got together some talented directors
mm-hmm.
who had done horror or sci-fi, sure. and they pre-sold it in Europe. So whether you know, they showed it here on cable, I guess. I think.
Yeah.
Is it cable?
Yeah. Showtime, right?
Showtime, yeah. Showtime, yes. And obviously DVDs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, DVDs. So those were a smart investment. They were guaranteed of making their money back and then some. You know, by the way, Tales from the Crypt was not a success in first run. In DVD, maybe. Maybe, but those were extremely expensive half hours to produce, about $2 million a half hour.
Oh, yeah, I could imagine that they were expensive.
They're a classic, though, aren't they? I mean, we all know of them. Everybody knows about Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's successful or not, I mean, we all know about that.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of my thing. You know, I know about Tales from the Crypt. I know, you know, all the old Twilight Zone, Night Gallery, Tales from the Dark Side, Monsters.
Sure,
I mean, all those off the beaten path shows that were like that.
That's also just us, too.
Yeah.
Average Joe may not know them as well as we do because, you know.
I disagree, Michael. Stuff. I think everybody knows about that.
Well.
I'm not Michael Jackson.
That's George.
I'm sorry, George.
Hi, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
Here's the thing, though. Guys, the last time that was tried successfully, anthology horror, was technically not an anthology. And that was on the WB Supernatural. Okay. But Supernatural had a string, had a thread with the two brothers looking for their father. Mm. And something weird had happened, and it always took them to a weird place. And it was actually very well done. I watched some episodes in the first season. So that's how they did Anthology without doing it.
They had PG rating also.
Yes.
Like the X-Files. Yes. The X-Files did the same thing.
To give you the short version of what we've done, it's called Soul Shadows. There is there's a main character, the name is Tannis, and basically what she does is she collects these objects, she finds them one way or another, and each one of these objects represents a person's soul, and you know, they pretty much died when this object was in their possession, and you know, there's a slight intro with that character, then it goes into the story and you know, how things basically go down with that person, and you know, there's a quick ending. So, I mean, it's kind of
Tales from Anthology. That means she's the crypt keeper.
Absolutely, she's the crypt keeper.
Definitely. Yes, she is.
But
yes,
anyway, Ron, since we're getting low on time here, I had a question that I'm sure everybody's going to want to know the answer to, and that is, what's it like making a living as a writer? Is it
great question.
Are you happy that you did it, or do you have like regrets about doing it, or what's it like?
I don't want to know the answer to that.
The honest answer is there are days when you're on a show and you're happy and it's incredible and the critics love you. I can't believe I get paid for it. That's the exception and not the rule. There are other days when you want to be a pipe fitter. there are stars that life is too short that you've worked with. No names, Roseanne Barr. They're just horrible people. Suck the life out of a room.
How about Bruce Willis?
Bruce was a pro.
Good. Excellent.
He showed up. He always did the work. You know, as a person, you never really get inside. On the other hand, his co-star could be terrible.
I understand. I agree with you. Yeah.
And so there were, you know, that was a very turbulent set. Now, I loved doing it, though. I still loved, I grew so much as a writer. I learned so much about subtext and writing emotionally and using theme. None of this stuff I did in sitcom. So that was a terrific experience. But then, you know, look, I did a show with Jeremy Piven, who is very close to the Antichrist himself. And, it was
my kind of person.
Didn't show up because of a bad seafood reaction.
Yeah. It was not a pleasant experience. It was infectious. It was swimming upstream. And, you know, my partner.
Like a salmon?
Yeah, I couldn't think of spawn. It was not fun. I didn't like it.
So I mean, you have a lot of days where you go in and it feels like work. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can totally see that. I can totally understand that because I would think that, you know, you're not going to go in every day. It's going to be, you know, sunshine and roses and, you know, little leprechauns with pots of gold coming out of their asses. You know, it's going to be. It's going to be a job.
Well, I'll tell you one of the coolest things, though. This is one of my coolest stories. And I'm so glad I got to do this. Again, Duckman, I don't know if you saw it, but he was a very, he was a duck. He was a duck. There you go.
Okay.
Very angry duck who always ranted
duck
at the world and didn't realize he was part of the problem. And we did this one episode where he finds out that his father was not his father. He and his real father's guys who declares his 1 acre of land a country, and he's got a gun and he holds off everyone. You know, one of those. What do you call those people? Survivalists.
Yeah. Hillbillies.
A southerner.
Militia.
Yeah.
A southerner.
My mom.
In the episode, Duckman learns that's his father. Goes to see him.
And, Southern Duck.
And they're surrounded by the FBI. And in the script we wrote, you know, Duckman won't come out. He won't leave his father. And Cornfed is his sidekick and says, and this is what we wrote in the script, you know, Duckman, if you won't listen to your family, if you won't listen to your friends, will you at least listen to the hardest working man in show business, Mr. James Brown? And the camera goes over, and there's James Brown. Huh. Duckman, huh, give yourself up, yeah! We wrote that script, and we sent it, and he agreed to do it. And so this was, I'll never forget, he shows up, he's got the tux, he's got
James Brown?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
In our studio, and I'm sitting there directing the voice directing the session, and I'm sitting with the sound mixer. He's 6 feet away from me in front of a mic, and I say, I was just, first of all, so in awe, and I brought my Live at the Apollo album to get autographed, and I forgot to have him do it. And I say, so, Mr. Brown, would you like to hear the music we have first? And he goes, Amish, what do you want to do? Would you want to kick in, or how would you like to do this? Listen, Mono, I couldn't understand a word he was saying.
I go, were you like in the Eddie Murphy bit then?
well, I couldn't. Behind me in the booth was his entourage. And so I couldn't say, what the is he saying? So I just go, take one. And he kicks in, and he can't do anything less than 110%. And so, you know, he just goes into the, you know, I mean, that's him. If you get the DVD and you get the watch the episode, that's him.
Now, I'm seriously thinking that something like that, it was actually pretty far ahead of its time. In Duckman run, what, mid-late 90s?
Mid to late, like 94 to
90. Yeah, I mean, you see stuff like that on Family Guy all the time now. Seriously, I mean, that's like the whole MO for that show.
Yeah. We were very frustrated that we were on USA at the time, which didn't know how to promote us.
Right, long time ago.
Yeah, and you know, when we were with Murder, She Wrote reruns and wrestling. And then there was Duckman, and we were getting incredible reviews, probably the best reviews of my career. And no one was, you know, our audience on average was like 1.5 million a week, you know.
Can I ask one more question here,
Ron? Yes.
In terms of moonlighting, when you're writing for, you know, again, big stars and coming in after the fact, were the stars saying what you were writing in your screenplay, in your script? Or were they ad-libbing and going on and you were saying, cool, let's do this?
No. No. They respected – well, Glenn had created the, I guess, rules, if you will. But if there was a word change, they had to call and ask us.
Even Bruce Willis? Because he is very obviously, you know, he was doing a lot of crazy things on that show, right?
He was. But the funny thing about Bruce is he sometimes – he wasn't inherently funny. He sometimes had to be shown where the joke was.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So he didn't ad lib that much because I don't think he was confident, at least not at first. After he won the Emmy, things changed. I went down to the set one day, and this guy, director Alan Arkish, who did like Rock and Roll High School.
Yes, sure.
Okay, he's directing, and Alan's just sitting there on an apple box, kind of forlorn, and Bruce is going, okay, I'm going to come in this way. We'll get the master shot from this side. And Alan's just kind of sitting there like, you know, I'm, what am I doing here? Now, that was the third season. But early on, no, there was no ad-libbing at all.
And you were writing for the early time, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I have a question for you, Ron. For those at Simply Scripts, including all of us here who are new, would we stand a better chance if we tried submitting feature scripts to the powers that be or TV serials to the powers that be?
Right now, agencies in Los Angeles have gone through this. Well, everything's been downsized, and because there are fewer assignments out here, they're not reading as much. They're not reading new writers.
Reading nothing, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, my own agency, I had a student who wrote just a killer spec office script. And I couldn't get my manager or my agents to read it. They just, it's just like, it's too much work for them to take on a new client right now. Because they have enough time, enough trouble servicing the clients they have with the reduced marketplace. So it's not a pretty picture for an outsider these days. I'm sorry to say.
Great, Ron. So, thank you.
I think each one is equally valuable and equally difficult, would be the short answer.
But don't stop trying, right?
No.
Don't stop trying.
I'm going to bed now.
Don't stop believing.
As Journey said, don't stop believing.
Don't stop believing.
And Jeff, I'm going to give Jeff one more question, which is his trademark question, so let him have it.
Yeah.
Actually, Ron, I've got a bottle of Jaeger in front of me. Do you drink Jägermeister?
No.
Ever? Or just not now?
No, I can't drink anything that sounds so Aryan.
In your younger year, did you?
But there's a picture of a deer on the bottle.
No, I'm a beer guy. However, I...
Okay. Oh, I love you.
All right. We're going to continue this beer and Jägermeister discussion offline.
Thank you, Mike, for that option, though.
Yes, I have to give you...
I'll pop the beer in your honor.
We are going to thank Ron for giving us a good hour plus of material, although he asked us to edit out all the bad stuff, so you'll probably be listening to about 4
There's
minutes.
No bad stuff.
But up, bump, bump.
No, anything I said,
you. Ron, you sound like a good guy, man. Thank you.
Ron, thanks so much. That was excellent of you to do our show.
Thank you for being interested in all my ramblings.
Oh, it was great.
We can ramble as a guest next time, or as a regular panelist, and you can just talk about things that you want to talk about then. You don't have to be under the spotlight and listening to all of our questions and inquiries. You could just give your opinion and be done with it. If you'd like to be back on, maybe this was a horrible, traumatizing experience for you.
And Ron, you'll probably get 5 emails from all of us here with scripts saying, please read this and tell me what you think.
No, you won't. No, you won't.
Oh, 3 of me. And 3 of me.
No, he won't. He won't.
Well, I believe that this is going to be one of those episodes where we're just going to get cut off in midstream. So,
Sorry, guys. I'm done.
To all those people that made comments that our show was declining. Our ship is going up, up, up the way.
It'll just...